Hello, everyone out there. What is going on? Stephen Ignoramus here. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant, episode number 47, 7:01 p.m., August 31st, 2019. So pleased you could be with us. Call Me Ignorant is a live conversation show, whether with an interesting content creator, an expert in a field, a controversial figure, or with a fellow human being trying to spread a message. Call Me Ignorant will try to solve the problems of the world, conversationally speaking. We are streaming live right now to YouTube, Twitch, Periscope, Mixer, DLive, and Picarto. If you can't catch the show live, you can find it after the fact on the above-mentioned platforms, also on BitChute and FreedomScoop.com. Call Me Ignorant is also available in podcast format on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean. You can find me on Twitter at Ignoramus Steve. Join the Discord server linked below in the show description, or send me an email at StephenIgnoramus@gmail.com if you would like to appear on the show. With me on the program today is Patrick Booth. Patrick is a musician and the chief technology officer at COEX.io, which stands for Kindness of Humanity Exchange. Kindness of Humanity is a blockchain-based website which innovates how humanity contributes to charities and philanthropic projects. I'm really excited to talk to him today to get an education on how Kindness of Humanity works and to talk to him a little bit more about charities, music, and decentralization. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Patrick. Welcome to Call Me Ignorant.
Awesome. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. And thank you, Stephen, for allowing me to open up to your platform and address you and your audience at the same time. Hopefully we can change the world together, sir.
Yeah. So, you know, basically you hit me up and you said you found the show after Rachel, who goes by Crypto Finally on social media platforms, her and I did a discussion, and, you know, she was really good at explaining everything, but I'm still on the level of with blockchain and, you know, and crypto of like, I get it, but I don't get it. So basically, you know, we're going to talk today about what your website is and kind of some of the terminology things. And maybe we'll wrap up with talking about a little bit of music and stuff like that. But first, why don't we just talk about what Kindness of Humanity Exchange is?
Kindness of Humanity Exchange is a DEX, a decentralized exchange, forthcoming on starting on the Ethereum blockchain network, and we're going to fork onto our own mainnet with charities operating nodes. And the nodes are going to be capturing transaction fees for every single transaction that happens over the blockchain, whether the transaction is for Bitcoin, Ethereum, Ripple, any other crypto asset that our community wishes to list. And those fees go directly to the charity. Withdrawal fees go directly to the charities as well. So this is going to enable mass amounts of liquidation from crypto assets to be essentially handed over to organizations that need it the most, that pledge to our causes, and we pledge to theirs, essentially.
So, you know, when I checked out your guys' website and I think it says like the white paper, which like is just a PDF of how everything works. I didn't know until, I'd seen it on a couple websites that there's a difference between Ethereum currency and the Ethereum network. So can you explain like how that works, how Ethereum because I have, I think, one Ethereum on Coinbase or whatever on my, and, but they also, you can like list stuff on their network. How does that whole thing work?
Okay, so Ethereum operates under a protocol of EIP, and EIP is essentially a network of issuance where people can come and practically list protocol improvements and, work improvements as well within the network. And someone decided, you know what, let's go ahead and list a way for people to create comment sections on the Ethereum network for specific contents on the blockchain. And this stemmed to tokenization. So the main protocol that Ethereum uses for tokenization is called ERC, which is a request for comments, electronic request for comments, Ethereum request for comments.
Okay.
And essentially, that's exactly what people have been building with Ethereum. They've been creating tokens that can act as utility tokens or security tokens to issue on top of the blockchain. And these come in many different form factors. There are tons of different types of ERC-20s. I honestly don't think I have enough time to elaborate on each of them. But the most common one and the one that we're using right now is the ERC-20 token.
Okay, gotcha. And so, what is a node?
A node is essentially a endpoint for data communications for somebody that hosts on the network. So Ethereum has three types of nodes. There are full nodes, there are fast nodes, and there are light nodes. So each of them require a certain set of parameters within the machine that you're operating on, and also some nodes actually cost about 32 Ethereum to essentially stake onto the network.
Oh, wow. So
Yeah.
pretty expensive as things go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
Well, considering where you when you bought in and how early you got involved in the network,
Yeah,
essentially. So
gotcha. Yeah.
some people actually mined for their 32 Ethereum, so they didn't have to really pay much besides their electricity bill, you know. So
Did you get into technology? Did you go to school for it, or just learn through it from being online, or how'd you get into
well,
that?
yeah, I learned about it through just being online practically my entire life. So essentially, my trade is in audio visual works. So I'm big on, you know, data transmission through HDMI, SDI, Ethernet, practically just running cable, also setting up uplights, televisions, etc. So I was actually just at an event earlier in 2017 before the massive bull run, and they were talking about smart contracts and whatnot. And the woman next to me, who she practically hired me to do the job, I was talking to her about it, and she was like, "I have no clue what you're talking about." I'm like, "Oh, this is practically the future." Just describing everything that I learned through the internet beforehand, and how Bitcoin practically rose from being like, 50 cents a dollar to being like $8,000, $9,000 at the time. So yeah, it seems like most people are in the dark about this technology still because it's kind of a niche market.
Yeah.
I mean, there's less than about a million Bitcoin wallets, so yeah, it's still in its infancy. So,
Wow.
and just to think, there are 2 billion people on the internet, right?
Yeah, I mean, so when I talk to most people about this, and I'm a little bit in the middle. I mean, I spend most of my time on the internet, but I can't just bring the jargon and the terminology to mind like right away, because I'm just like, what is it? Like, can you hold it? Like, is it a physical thing? Like, what is it? How does this work? And if people are trying to get educated on this, what type of process? Because I mean, I know I got some people that are like 50, 60 years old watching the show, and like my mom and stuff like that, and she's like, what is this? I don't know what Bitcoin is, or is there a website where people can get educated on this stuff, or do you just work with it and learn as you go?
I think the best way to learn is to actually go on to Bitcoin Talk or go to Wikipedia and type in what Bitcoin is all about as well. I mean, really, it's kind of funny because Wikipedia called Bitcoin a scam, but now they practically redacted that, and they decided to actually take it for donations now. So here's the thing. Everything about this space is open source. Everything is transparent. Anybody can practically go to the GitHub repositories and read up on the frequently asked questions and learn that way too. So yeah, it's a really good outlet as well as just going directly to the source of the information, which is the GitHub repositories. That's what I would personally recommend. So yeah.
Gotcha. So, when did the idea of for kindness of humanity start? Like, was this, do you said it's like, did you think of it with other people, or are you the person that started it by yourself?
Okay, so there's this gentleman in Missouri by the name of Russell Heerot, and he's our CEO. He's essentially the one that's registering us with the SEC and FinCEN. So now we can be completely legitimate and operate in the United States of America. And he was talking about selling a product on the blockchain. And I was like, I think the best thing to solve right now is the fact that the US government is trying to tax crypto traders 15 to 35% for crypto to crypto trades, and that's a lot of money for capital gains just from transferring one asset to another asset. It's a major issue that needs to be addressed. And I was like, huh, you know what? I was jokingly saying this. I was like, you know what? Let's create a exchange where charities get the fees. That way, these traders can just write it off. You know, they can just report it as a gain, but a charitable donation at the same time. And he was like, that's funny. That's actually a really good idea. Are you serious? I'm like, why not? And yeah, that's how the idea I came to mind. So essentially, we got the website designed, put it up online, and I composed a white paper, about 4,000 word white paper, and pressed practically a week. So and Russell has been handling all the heavy lifting of the project, just trying to get everything legitimized, securing capital, finding and composing the team. Because right now we have a team of about 5 or 6 people working behind the scenes on the project, practically getting the Discord community put together and just doing what he has to do. I did issue the smart contract on top of Ethereum, so I am the owner, but that's okay. Probably going, for now. And yeah, that's how it all came about.
So, I also wanted to ask, because basically, since you hit me up and you sent me the link to the Discord server, and you said, I just joined the server. I didn't do anything on it because I knew I was going to talk to you tonight. But how does the server work? I have my own Discord server, so I know, you can send information, you can, talk to people, you can create channels to the left. But how does it work in terms of you receive a certain amount of is the currency called KOH?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
That is essentially our token.
It's your token.
Classified as a security token up until you swap it out for a utility token.
Okay.
And it's just our way of practically providing distribution of the network early, practically a pre-sale, a seed investment tool. And what you do is you actually go to the channel and you can see what tokens we're going to be listing on our exchange. And also you can get involved in our bounties program, which Russell Herod, the CEO of Co, runs. And all you have to do is drop your Ethereum address, preferably in a MyEther wallet address or a Cypher address if you're on iOS, or if you're on Android, a MetaMask address. And you input our contract, our smart contract address that we issue out in the Discord, and you can just see exactly how many Co you have in your wallet. And there you go. You got our token airdropped to you directly from the CEO of the company.
Okay.
Yep. And we are issuing these bounties and airdrops for people that want to gain a stake. Just by interacting with us and, liking our Facebook page, following us on Twitter, and doing great things in their community, being a kind person, doing a vlog showing that you are essentially spreading kindness and being a good person outside of the ether sphere, outside of the ethernet, the internet that we know it, and spreading the word of the CoX project as well. So.
Yep. And so someone now, one question just about terminology a little bit. So you said a security token versus a utility token. Is that different from something that's worth actual money? Like for instance, one Ethereum is worth X amount of money. Is that a utility token, like a financial token? I still don't understand exactly what the whole token thing is.
All right, so Ethereum is a cryptocurrency that backs itself by the use case of the network, which is, of course, a distributed network that can do 10 transactions per second and issue tokens.
Yep.
And anybody can access it. Nobody can seize it. It's private. It's yours once you own it. And no government can take it away from you. No person can take it away from you unless you give them your currency. So that's the whole premise of Ethereum. And the SEC has acknowledged that Ethereum is not a security. Mm. So that's the bright side. It's an actual currency. It's not necessarily a security.
Okay.
But the comments, the ERC-20s and the ERC-721s act as either utilities or securities. So companies have raised billions of dollars with ERC-20 tokens in the past. And I think there are still IEOs that are still, earning upwards of $200 million, every month, essentially, in the United States and abroad. So It's a matter of what the token is going to be used for and how it's actually being issued, and who is going to be gaining these tokens. Are they going to be gaining these tokens at an expectations of profit? And if there is an expectation of profit from an investment, then that is a security, especially if there's no real use behind the token itself. It's just, you know, a asset that was essentially created on top of a network that doesn't necessarily do anything besides being transferred from one address to the other. Now, utility tokens are practically where you buy the token and then you go to a website and you decide, you know what, I'm going to use this token to create something awesome for my website. And that completely destroys the token in the process.
Okay. Oh, man. All right. I did not get that until right now. Okay, gotcha. Okay, so that's the difference between a security and utility token. And, like, if you go on something like Minds.com, they have their tokens that you can exchange, and that can get you, like, I don't know, clout, for a better word, on Minds and promote yourself, and that destroys the token. And securities are for profit.
Exactly. That,
okay, gotcha.
It's like how companies decide, you know what, I'm going to register my business as an S Corp and we're going to have stocks. And that stock is essentially a security, essentially, that they can trade on the Wall Street Stock Exchange and pump up the price or give it to their employees as a form of equity, etc.
Gotcha. And hence, that's when you mentioned the actual exchange from KOH to when it, to the utility, that's why it's the use of it, and it's the use of it that defines the difference between the two.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You completely understand.
Okay.
So once these users collect our KOH token, they can take the token and hold it up until the exchange is live. And then they can transfer it from one token to the other, which is going to be called the CO to KHX transfer. And then once you have KHX, you can practically have ownership rights of the network. You can stake it for a light node, or you could use it to vote. And then when you vote, it destroys the token. And practically, you can, you know, put it aside and just, you know, send it to somebody else if you like to, too.
And so, you know, what I'm looking at right now, I have your the white pages open, and at the very end of it has like a timeline, like a 2019 to 2020, like quarter two 2019. And I believe we're in quarter three right now, right? Quarter three of 2019. And then so, and a lot of the stuff you just described, it centers around like the launch or whatever of when it goes, when the exchange goes live. You know, this probably is obvious, but like, why does it take, why do you need to plan? Like, why can't you just do it all at once? Is it just a technology where you have to work on certain aspects of the technology and promoting, and you just decide on a timeline and, you know, that it is what it is?
Well, yes, more so because this is a project that requires a lot of heavy lifting and a lot of governing regulatory bodies getting involved and signing off on this project, as well as capital fundraising too, because we're going to need to hire lawyers. We're going to need to essentially create a way for users to download a mobile app. We need to issue the mobile app to various platforms, such as the Android, iOS store. And, you know, this takes time. This takes effort. And, you know, forking information that's designed for a browser is simple, but porting it over to a mobile application, that's where, you know, the heavy lifting comes into play. Also, we need to make sure that our network is fully decentralized and autonomous. So definitely we need to worry about going viral and also capturing charities. And charities is the big part. That's essentially securing the business model entirely. So we are in talks right now with nonprofit 501c3s. So it's an exciting time right now for us.
So you got, you said you only have like five or six people working on this though?
Right now.
Wow, man. Yeah, I didn't think about how much work that was until right now. I mean, this is like a, because the like kind of the thing that seems like it'll take the longest and is working through the government. You know, all the paperwork, like you said, you need lawyers and stuff like that. So, what kind of, okay, so let's talk about charities. Were you interested in working with charities before you got into technology? Like, what happened first? You being interested in philanthropy or technology?
Well, when I first got out of high school, and I didn't necessarily have a job, I was volunteering, and I worked with the Wounded Warrior and Teachers in Action, and that's essentially how I got my first work experience before I started, getting involved in hospitality and whatnot. So I definitely started doing philanthropy first. And then most of my technology experience stems from hospitality. So, yep.
So did you, so when, what type of charities are involved with KOH right now? Like, have you, do you guys have like a list of them, or are you still just still in negotiations, or what?
Actually, what we like to do right now is for our users to nominate charities that they think that we should
Cool.
essentially, list and get in contact with. But we are in contact with a few animal charities right now, and also reaching out to other nonprofits that are on a list of Charity Navigator. We're just capturing as much contact information as possible. So
Okay,
that's the premise.
so what I'm gonna do right now is I have, you know, we're talking, having this chat on Discord right now live, and so I can't go into your server through my computer, but what I'm gonna do right now is I'm gonna go into the Discord server on my phone, and basically I'm gonna read some of the channels to the left. I want you to explain me how, like, you know, because we're gonna have a lot of people listening live, and I don't know if, like, if I'm able to link the Discord server in the show description or whatever. I want some people to join this to get educated on this stuff. But so I'm on it right now, and you join up, and you know it says like charity nomination, artwork, web design, stuff like that. And so if I want to nominate a charity, I go into charity nomination, and I, you know, put a link in there or make a case for it, and it's as simple as that.
Yes,
Okay,
absolutely.
gotcha. And so is there like, I don't know, is there like a vetting process or a charity that you guys would not accept or something like that, or like certain types of charities that you would want to stress over others?
So we are definitely going to have a vetting process. That's the entire premise. We need to make sure that these charities are doing good and that they showcase exactly what they would do with the funds on a month-by-month basis. Otherwise, the funds are trapped in escrow.
Okay. Got so so one of the things I like about this is that it's like you said, decentralized, and that's the nature of the blockchain, right? I mean, like, there is no blockchain without decentralization, right?
You're right.
Okay.
Otherwise, it's just a database, a
Yeah.
MySQL database.
Okay, so and so for it to be blockchain, what, yeah, I don't know how to ask this. Like, if for it to be blockchain, what has to happen in the technology? Does it have to have like just like a copy of itself at each point that it can be seen? Is that how it works?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
And all parties can see it, and they can see exactly what's being held by everyone at the same time. That way, nobody's withholding any information, and you can download a CV and send it to an authority.
Gotcha. So like, I think, I had this dude, Casey Wells on, a couple weeks ago, who's r actually running for president. And
Awesome.
one of the biggest things that he's, talking about is how, like, a lot of people, you got squabbles going on. Big business is the problem. Big government is the problem. And like people butt heads. But what he was talking a lot about how, corrupt entities in history have basically washed their money through philanthropy. And what, if you make enough money, and like the Rockefellers, for instance, you make enough money in one field, you run for office, and you basically funnel the money through a philanthropy or some sort of cause, which can do good, but also is, I don't know, can do bad as well. But that would essentially be impossible through blockchain, right? Because everyone can see it, everyone can be accountable, right?
Entirely.
Okay.
That's the entire premise of, well, in a sense, that's the premise. So I'm not entirely sure how we could possibly circumvent a bad actor of that nature, posing as somebody that just wants to operate a light node and has friends in powerful places that could essentially deposit tons of money into the network via a very large Bitcoin transaction. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely sure how we could possibly circumvent that. But when it comes down to our charities that we're going to be involved with, we need to make sure that they have a legitimate operation that isn't necessarily funded or literally an operation that's owned by a politician that's been taking, you know, big Coke money, you know, big oil money, or let's say, for instance, any other major institution that's been, you know, essentially toxic to the planet or humanity as a whole. Because here at Kindness of Humanity, we need to make sure that humanity comes first and not just profits of defense contractors and profits of the military. You know, of big oil tycoons, essentially.
Right. So, and so, you know, so with blockchain, you know, like you said, you could, anyone could look at it. Is it, you view it as like code or documents? Like if I'm trying to look at, you know, like does the code copy onto my computer if I have, or does it do it onto, your computer, your phone, or a server somewhere? Where does it actually happen?
So depending on where you stake the node,
yeah,
that's where all the transactions and code will be, you know, permeating from all the connections from every single trader, and all the database itself will be going to that node that you operate. And you can have this node operating in the cloud via a virtual private server. Or you could have it on your local desktop machine, you know, but you're going to have to be updating your hard drives and SSD drives whenever the space becomes a bit too cumbersome.
That was going to be my next question. So by definition, something on the blockchain just gets bigger and bigger in terms of size over time.
Yep.
And even if it's, you know, 0.001% bigger, it's by definition, it just gets bigger and bigger, and you have to store it somewhere. And wow, that's fascinating, man. So what kind of charities are you into? Like if you know, you mentioned animals a little bit, but like if you nominated a charity in there, like what are your two or three ones that you want to focus on as far as giving?
Well, you know, I really like the idea of hospitals,
cool,
nonprofit hospitals, and also finding kids, lost children. That's where my heart is. Because there are so many kids that are sick and they need their parents, and it's, you know, they're distraught, essentially. That's where my heart is. Also, I have a song on the blockchain that's a trance track that is going towards the Amazon rainforest right now. And literally 10% of the royalties per play is going directly to the cause for Artists for Good. And they're essentially buying portions of the Amazon rainforest to restore.
Wow.
It's been logged.
Very cool. And what about some of the other people on the Discord server? Have people, you know, have they nominated certain types of charities, or has there been a big push there? Like how many people do you guys have on the server now?
We have about 130 people.
Okay.
And we started the server less than 2 weeks ago.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
I think less than 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
Technically, yeah, because it's 31st now. So
yeah.
Excuse me.
Cool. Yeah. And so, has there been a big push to nominate certain charities? And like, do you guys do like discussion in the server as well about this kind of thing, or like post all your notes, or is it just kind of right now how the tokens are exchanged?
Yeah, that's the premise of the Discord community right now. Nobody has actually nominated a charity yet so far, which is a little something that, you know, doesn't necessarily vibe with me. I've nominated charities myself, so I think that people should probably rally in that direction. But, you know, there's so many servers that these people are probably involved in, so I'm not entirely sure, but we should make that an obligation at some point or another,
right,
or put a bounty on it.
Yeah,
that's what I would advise.
Yeah, interesting, man. This is fascinating, man. And also, I didn't You know, I didn't realize the, you know, I guess the scope of it, the size and the scope of it. Like, but it's obvious. You guys got to work with the government. You got to, you know, charities can be, you know, multinational. You know, and they're not corporation, but, you know, they can, like, something like the Red Cross or something like that. That's a huge international organization. And, you know, the amount of stuff that has to be done with five or six people pulling the strings is, it's pretty fascinating. And it all starts from technology, right?
Absolutely. So we are actually presenting this to VC and a ton of other publications as well.
VC, so, what is that? Yeah,
that's a venture capital.
Oh, it's okay. It's just okay. Yeah. Gotcha. Okay, I thought that you were talking about like a magazine or something like that. Okay, like
pardon me, I should have elaborated.
It's okay. So, it's just that's one of the things that I still am getting used to about technology is like the acronyms, the websites and the jargon and stuff like that. I mean, I think that's probably how people feel when I talk about like music theory or something like that. Mm-hmm. Where it's like Tata, the minor seventh with the jazz, and you do the third inversion of the, you know, and feel like, yeah, I just want to listen to some hip hop, man.
We can talk about the sustain chord later sometime. Yeah. You know, let's just vibe out, bro.
Yeah. So what do you do during your day? Like, do you have a job other than this? Or, like, it seems like this is too much work for not enough time.
You're right, and I agree. So I actually am a trader on the blockchain.
Okay.
But I am also working on this full time.
Wow.
Yeah, it's something that's practically consumed my time. Really, it's just like wholeheartedly, majority of the time I'm thinking about this project. I'm in touch with my business partners and just, you know, talking about the progress of the exchange and what's going on. So.
And so, like, back to the kind of the the schedule or like when you guys are going to launch and stuff like that. So it says for quarter four, it says KHX airdrops to select NPOs and charities. Are you going to do that? Is that going to all happen during quarter four, or is that going to be an ongoing thing as you guys grow in size?
That's where we're going to start the airdrop.
You're going to start it. Okay, yes, gotcha. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then it says. Sorry, go ahead.
I said there's no time frame in which it can end.
Okay, great.
So, yep. That's the idea.
This is what you guys do. It's going to, each part of this process, is you're kind of tweaking it. So this is going to be how the server and how the website functions. And you said I forgot what you said earlier as far as the term for it, but basically the, what can be written off later. What is that called again? Like the fee? Is it the tax? Is it the fee?
It is what can be written off later is what's going to be listed on the ledger of the blockchain. So okay. Yes, it would be the fee. It would actually be the entire transaction of the entire transactions of the blockchain.
Okay. So, it's the entire thing. Okay.
Cause it's a distributed ledger after all.
Mm.
So also, when it comes down to distributing the tokens, we need to teach these charities that don't have an IT department, or they do have an IT department, but they don't understand what blockchain is. We need to teach them and give them the necessary hardware to move forward with the project so they can secure their operation from this device that will quite possibly be a Raspberry Pi Arduino module that could connect to a laptop. Or if they have some cloud-based infrastructure, we could just connect it via USB to their cloud service server that's at their operation. And this would just run around the clock 24/7 verifying nodes. And the node will show up on the network, and the users that are involved with the network can just go down a list of charities that are integrated with our platform and say, you know what, I'm going to pledge my money towards brain cancer research.
Hmm. Wow. So, yeah. So you would actually provide them with, like, you know, education, the know-how, and, you know, they would have to get their own equipment and stuff like that.
No, actually, we want to. That's the reason we're raising seed capital and VC capital. We want to actually give them the infrastructure. We want to actually give them the equipment to operate.
Sweet, so, man.
Yeah.
Wow. This is fascinating, man. I'm definitely going to look into this a lot more. And so you said you you have to drop your Ethereum key inside of the server, and that gets you 50 KOH.
Yep.
And the what you convert it to is KHX, you said?
Exactly.
Okay.
Or you can convert it to Ethereum if somebody chooses to buy it from you.
Mm.
So essentially, you need to make sure that you're holding on to it so that you can transfer it to another address once that address goes live. So we're going to deploy that smart contract soon as well.
Okay. And then it says KHX private sale in quarter one of 2020. And then quarter two, begin mobile app development. After that, launch mobile trading DEX. And then quarter four next year will be full community ownership. And that's when you mentioned that earlier, when like the people that buy it or that, I don't know if it's, is it if buy in or like get in early, will have a stake in the actual organization, right?
Absolutely. So what we're doing is, as a team, the people that started this, we're only going to hold 10% of the tokens.
Okay.
That's it.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Majority of these projects that start on blockchain, it's like some of these companies, they have a huge escrow tokens that they can liquidate on their user base at any time. We don't want that to happen with our exchange. We want to make sure that our token holders have the say of the network and the development of the network overall once the infrastructure is set in place. And we'll serve as a decentralized autonomous organization and a trading platform in one.
Wow.
So the users will be able to tell the charities how they feel about what they're doing with the funds. The users will be able to vote on what assets we should list and when we should fork, hard fork, soft fork, whenever they want to vote on a important decision that will, change the direction of the network. Essentially, the users will be able to also audit these charities too, and vote on which charities they want to get involved, depending on the capacity of the network. Because, if another charity wants to get involved, essentially, we don't necessarily have the token supply for them to stake a full node, then if there's a cause that doesn't necessarily want to be involved anymore, or they'd like to stay involved, but the network says we want this other charity involved, there could be a democratizing vote on what charities stays and what charities inherits the decentralized node.
Wow.
At that point. Yep.
Wow, that's really cool, man. This is a hell of an idea, dude. This is really, really cool. Like, it's just started from like two people, huh? I mean, like you need, that's the way I think about it is that, if I write a song, I wrote it, but it's also, I didn't like, discover the 12 notes. I mean, and there's, hundreds of years of technology, coming up to that point. But at the end of the day, two people can think of a song, and this is just, one or two people, now five or six thinking of this whole idea, right?
Exactly. Wow. You got it. You hit the nail on the head.
Wow. So that's insane. What is a fork? Is that the routing of information? You said a hard fork and a soft fork. What is that?
So a fork is where the network decides that there is a major point in the ledger's accumulation of information, and in order for the information to fully continue to be decentralized or enable for the ledger to be stable and there's no double spend, there will be a fork. So the network is essentially taking one information and cloning it and going into an opposite direction and continuing the distributed hash table.
Mm.
So, and the distributed hash table is just another fancy word for the ledger itself.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a synonymous. Okay. And,
exactly.
All right. Interesting. So before I asked that, you said you've like artists and programmers and stuff like, and you mentioned like you're a musician and you, did you say you create music on the blockchain? Like, do you get paid off the blockchain? Like, how does that all work as a musician?
Well, essentially what I do is I create the music myself in my software. Then I upload it to a service called SoundChains and Shune. And SoundChains handles, practically the logistics of dealing with copyrights. And that's another form of tokenization for me. And they also run some advertisements and licensing deals for me as well. And Chune allows me to advertise to a user base in the community that's also on the ERC-20 blockchain, where I get paid every single day, and it's per play compared to how everybody else is doing on the network via smart contract.
Wow, I'm looking at it right now. This is cool. Man, it is a big world out there, yo. Like, wow. So, I mean, I'm looking at Chune right now, and you said it gets paid by per play. And so it says Chune, Crypto, and Tunes. How long has this been around?
It started in 2017, late 2017. So it just started practically. It was in closed beta in 2017. It went open beta in 2018. And I was lucky enough to be one of the first 20,000 musicians to be on the platform. And I have accumulated over 1 million Chune tokens, 1 million Chune notes, about 15,000 organic streams. So
sweet. Do you what do you go by as a musician? Do you just go by Patrick Booth, or what?
I actually have a ton of aliases. Okay. That because I'm like a creative mastermind. I like to make brands.
Okay.
So what I did was I created a collective. And the collective is essentially just me. Every single version or every single artist that's a part of the collective is just a different iteration of my musical mind. So I have a psytrance alias. I have a hip hop alias. I have a chill out alias. And yeah, that's the way it is.
And so you made a collective, and depending on kind of what genre space you're operating, and you're like a different person in the alias, or a different, a different alias inside of the
same person. Yep.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Exactly. Inside of the collective. Yep. Yeah. But these also include the collaborations that I've done as well. So that's the reason why I call it a collective, because it's not just me on every single track. It's a bunch of other people that collaborated with me. So
cool. And do you perform live at all? You work with a band or anything like that, or is it just mostly in-house?
I've performed live twice.
Okay.
But, yeah, it's not much. So I'm not actually like getting paid to, play venues, so.
Interesting.
It's just,
And that's actually most of my experience. Most of my experience is just like, I've been in like, I don't know, probably more than 100 bands. And I've worked way more live than I have, in studio, and I want to get more into that. And I teach music as well. So I think it's why I'm still like an old man. Like, I'm only 31, but I still just like, I'm like, all right, I'm going to strum an acoustic guitar. And people are like, no, you got to get on this crypto, music website. I'm like, damn, what's crypto?
Well, you don't have to. There's some people that are just fine with staying on Spotify and just being where the fans are. But if you want to be on the forthcoming frontier of the new revolution of value, then it's a good advice. It's good advice, really. There's so many other competitive platforms that are competing against Chune for the ERC-20 space as well. So there's plenty of platforms you can choose from.
Decentralization and blockchain is like, I don't know, it seems like it's kind of the future of most good organizations. If you can, like, especially for transparency reasons, I mean, I'm thinking governments, companies, like we've talked about charities and things like that. Like, you really think it's where most things are going if things go right?
I agree. Yes, absolutely. It's just a matter of showing that you're doing something good with the money or assets that you have. And there's so much infrastructure that's being built around blockchain right now, for anti-money laundering and for know your customer data. So now you can actually tell exactly who you're transacting with, even though it's pseudo-anonymous code via the blockchain.
Interesting.
Not to mention, there are governments that are actually backing stablecoin smart contracts built on Ethereum, just to make sure that everything is up to date and up to par with the security of the token, and that they know exactly who's transacting in their native currency, but it's a digital currency, even though the government didn't issue it. So, yeah, I think transparency and actually doing good is definitely in the sector of blockchain. But mind you, there are still some underground actors that operate in the deep web that think otherwise. I'm more of a libertarian. I don't want to like talk about, you know, politics and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I do believe that freedom of commerce and freedom to transact should come forth from this, medium.
Yeah.
Of cryptocurrency. And there are a lot of people that can't actually sell what they want to sell in certain, you know, jurisdictions. Mm. So they just do it away from the regulatory bodies and on .tor or .onion addresses. So
hang on one second, man. Sorry.
No worries.
That's so funny, dude. I'm so sorry. Sorry, my cat stepped on the demo button on my keyboard and it started like playing like a demo classical song. That was hilarious. All right, my bad.
That's cool.
All right, so you're basically just describing agorism. Do you know what that is?
Actually, no, I don't.
Agorism. Okay, some people say agorism, some people say agorism. But essentially, it's any time you're getting around the financial authority where you are. I mean, it could be anything from someone giving me $20 under the table to mow their lawn, to operating in like the deep web, the dark web, to because they can't. Basically, what you were just describing. So it's anything from like low level, cutting hair on a street corner to, essentially to anywhere from that to like tax evasion, you know? And so anytime that you're bypassing like the financial law, I mean, and also agorists and, you know, anarchists out there right now are probably like, dude, this guy's butchering this explanation, but it's essentially that. It's like at any time, like, so you could think of, crypto as a form of agorism or whatever. Like you said that you have to, pay taxes and stuff like that. And I don't know if you like, did you hear about this letter that the IRS, like an open letter they just sent to all crypto owners? Like, so, it's just that whole thing of bypassing the financial institution. So, operating under the table, and, it's nefarious stuff. And it's also me, selling apples on the street corner,
Yes, you're right. I completely get what you mean. And yeah, that open address was just to people saying that we know that you have crypto. Please report it. Just report it, please.
Oh, man.
Otherwise, we will find you and we will audit you.
Yeah.
It's like that one movie where the actor is like saying, spent my time developing a very developing a great set of skills.
Yeah.
And
we will find you. And we will tax you. Yeah.
And we will tax you. Yeah. Yep. Oh, man. I forgot the name of the actor who said that.
Liam Neeson. Yeah.
Yeah, Liam Neeson. Oh, man. Yep.
So I don't know. We'll probably just hang around for about 10 more minutes or something like that. But, go ahead.
Speaking of Hollywood and Liam Neeson, Russell Herod, he actually has friends that are operating a charity in Los Angeles, where it's a theater charity, and they're helping people that are downtrodden, living in the skid, and, need a place to put that angst and, financial turmoil to rest, give them a way to, actually utilize a community sector that can, help them build a skill in the art of theater and the art of acting.
Cool.
So yeah, he's friends with the woman that they went to high school together. So yeah, he's been in communications with her, and that's one of the first clients that we're going to be onboarding as well.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, and that's, I don't give enough to charity. I don't give enough to people. I wish I did more, but like a lot of it is, because I want to know, like, not necessarily where my money's going, but that it's doing good. I don't care. I don't need to see the person's receipts or whatever, but that's one thing that I think like almost all, educators and philanthropies should get behind is building skills. You know, because if you can teach a person to do whatever, to like grow their own food or, you know, entertain people or whatever it is, if you can just build skills, that's at the end of the day, that's what real value is like your own labor and your own time spent. You can either pay it forward. You can either, you know, you can do whatever you want. You can build something, you can make something. And it seems like kind of true creativity and true value is in skills. It's like in skills and products. You know, because like the money, you can't eat the dollar bill. You can't eat the Bitcoin. You got to spend it on water, food, family, rent at some point.
You're right.
Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why we want to make sure that people are learning and growing on our platform. You know, one of the sections on our website says, you know, just learn as you earn, you know, because we want to teach people how to fish. You know, if you give a man a fish, for one day he'll eat it and then he'll starve. If you teach him how to fish, he'll never be hungry. So that's the entire premise. But as you were saying about having charities teach and, you know, practically foster growth via creativity, via, you know, support systems, and just trying to make sure that these people actually build skills, now they can earn more money and better themselves. That's what we want to look for when we're vetting our clients and the charities that we're going to be acquiring for the network. So
interesting. And when probably one thing I'll do in the next couple of days is I'll look to see if there's any charities that I want to nominate or whatever. And definitely the ones I would do would be centered around like educating people and especially kids. I mean, you know, that's the next generation and, you know, teaching, you know, it seems like, teaching people to farm and like purify water and build stuff is that's not going away. I mean, the people are, you know, a lot of people like to talk smack about, you know, the robots are coming, the robots are going to build everything. I think we're a long way away from like a robot building a full building. You know, you got 3D printers, but like, you know, like I guess not the robot building the full building, but like I press a button and it just, and that's how I see a lot of people think about that. But I think that day is far away. So it's like, do you think so? Or do you think that's a real possibility?
Well, there are a lot of things that are being automated in the construction sector. Mm. So we'll have to see how the technology evolves. Okay. That's all I can say about it. But there are many tools that are being released out into the market that are actually displacing construction jobs as we speak.
So yeah.
I don't think there's ever going to be a point where somebody in a central room is going to be like controlling the overseeing of many skyscrapers being built in the matter of a couple months, you know, with automated workers. You know, I don't think there's just going to be one man watching over many robots that are doing great things. I don't think that's going to be happening until maybe like 2077 or something of that magnitude.
Yeah. But,
you know, we'll see. It's exciting to see how automation and the Internet of Things is going to change humanity as a whole in the forthcoming economy. You know, the fourth industrial revolution is what they call it. So, you know, I think humanity is on a path of peril or a path of enlightenment, you know.
True.
We'll see what happens.
True, absolutely. Do you stay pretty up to date on like futurist type stuff? Like, are you like a futurist? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Some would call me a transhumanist, actually, a little bit, because I integrate wearable technology into my crafts a lot. I don't have any like robotic limbs or anything, but I do communicate Bluetooth signals from my body to my computers to trigger event sequences, etc., etc. So
what ways? Yeah, like, can you explain a little bit about that, like with your music or with just communication, like
with them?
Yeah, what do you mean?
With my music, definitely.
Okay.
But there's tons of gesture controls nowadays that you can utilize. But what I'm talking about here is like actually turning your hand into a drum machine. That way you don't even need to touch the drum machine itself. You can just snap your fingers and a song will play and sync with another song at the same time. Something like that.
Really?
Yeah, and then you can construct an XY modulation field around your body that connects via laptop and you can actually sweep filters, control phasers, automate delay just by twisting your wrist.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's stuff done, like that. That's done with Bluetooth?
Yep. I'm not sure if you've been following Neuralink, which is Elon Musk's brainchild. he wants to essentially install a neurotransmitter onto your brain via Bluetooth module, and it'll connect with your phone. And it's going to empower people's cognitive ability. Whoa. They've already tested it on apes. So,
holy shit. Yeah. Well, I'd never heard of that. I've heard of Neuralink just because I've seen like headlines in like, you know, on tech websites and stuff like that. Yeah, Elon Musk unveils Neuralink's plans for brain reading threads and a robot to insert them. As this from The Verge.
Yeah.
Not for humans yet. Dude, this is a crazy world out there. Wow. So, you know, as far as the automating, like the musical stuff, the you know, that's what I'm probably most interested in right now is like, so you can do like a chaos pad, but up it, you know, in, do you know what a chaos pad is? You ever heard
of
it?
Yeah. Of course. I have one on my guitar, actually.
Okay. Oh, okay. I one of those? Oh, it's tight. Yeah. All right. Sweet. So you do it and it's just, it'll just be like right here and you just go by the way it sounds. And
exactly.
Okay. Whoa.
It's like I can just literally throw my hand up, sweep a filter, and then literally press a button on my glove, and then it will disable the filter and return the value to default. Or something like press a button on my wristband that is controlling the central server, the central service from Bluetooth to the glove itself, and it will literally play a song and synchronize, and then I can turn a knob and then scroll through a bunch of parameters and then squeeze my thumb and make a skip over forward beats and just hold down my thumb and just scan through the entire track if I wanted to.
That's insane, man. Wow. What type of companies are doing this? Are these like mainstream companies or kind of smaller people
smaller just working? Companies.
Okay, gotcha.
Yep. So actually, the company that's manufacturing this product that I'm talking about is for sale.
Wow.
Yeah, I kind of want to acquire them.
Yeah.
But that's another project. That's another thought of mine in the future. So.
Wow.
But yeah, they have a lot of intellectual property that I want to dig my head into and actually code around. So.
Wow, that is so fascinating, man.
Speaking of coding, since I am the CTO, I do have coding experience. I've coded C++. I've coded XHTML. I've coded CSS and Ruby on Rails. And right now I'm in the process of fully, immersing myself in Solidity, which is just JavaScript. It's born from JavaScript. So, yeah, JavaScript is actually not too complex compared to what I've, practically learned in the past. So, yeah, it's a journey to understand this new language. But I have many books on it, digital and physical books that I've been learning from. So, yeah, I'm confident that we can hit our goals in the timeline that we've set for the project.
And so did you actually set up the website yourself and do all the coding yourself, or did you outsource that?
Well, yeah, I did code the website and the text, everything. Yeah, on that.
That's all you? Wow, man. This is amazing.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So you wrote up the white paper and you did the coding and the website yourself. Man.
Well, actually, Russell helped out with the coding, too.
Okay.
So I can't take credit for all of it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I did edit a lot of the JavaScript, the link backs, and also the technical details on the pages that are on the coex.io website. So, yes.
Wow, man. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm excited to go to State of Anarchy, Anarchadelphia, and I'll talk about it. And we're going to have a booth there. We're going to have a bunch of pamphlets, business cards, mingle with the Dollar Vigilante, We Are Change, Jeff Berwick, tons of people that are involved in decentralized finance and, have major influence. Also, I'm going to Coinvention as well. We're going to have a booth there. where we're going to do the same thing and do more YouTube interviews and stuff of this nature. So,
wow, man, there's so many communities out there. It's yeah, man, it's like, you know, you could definitely just get through all of life just keeping your head down and like living in a small town or like living in, I mean, I live in Washington, D.C., man. I haven't heard of half of this stuff.
You know, like, dude, I didn't know you were from Washington.
I live there. It's where I am right now. Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. You know, that's awesome. I'm in Virginia. Okay. I used to work out in D.C.
Oh, really?
I was doing 5-star AV work out in D.C.
Wow. So, interesting. Yeah. It's crazy. It came up just like last couple minutes. And we can talk for a couple more minutes about it. Like, where do you live in Virginia?
I live in South Riding.
So, okay.
Yeah. Practically the outskirts of Nova.
Yeah.
I lived in Gainesville. I've lived, in Bealton. So, just hopping from town to town in Virginia.
Cool. And,
yeah, I used to drive into D.C. practically every single day. And,
ooh, it's a rough drive.
Yes, it is. It's long hours on the road, but, you know, for, you know, a reasonable price, it can be worth it sometimes.
Right. So. Yeah, and I'm actually, you know, thinking about moving out of the city. I mean, I'm still probably work in the city, but, you know, mm-hmm. trying to get a house out in Maryland or Virginia because it just gets too expensive and you need, you know, to buy a place in D.C., it's a ton of money, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And even the apartments are pricey, too.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. So I'm looking at State of Anarchy in Philadelphia right now. So Anarchadelphia, so you guys have a booth at this, and you're giving, like, any talks or anything like that, or just a booth?
Yeah, we're going to be presenting on stage
for
about 15 to 20 minutes right before the, I believe, break for networking. And it's at a pretty nice hotel. It's at a 4-star Marriott. So it's going to be a nice little operation. And there's going to be a lot of people. Tickets are actually quite expensive, too. It's like, you know, something that I was blessed with because of my networks and being involved with a record company.
Okay. So, yeah. Interesting. And so, are you like signed with a record label or something like that, or just a network that you had?
I'm a CFO of a record.
Wow. Company. You do a lot, man. This is crazy. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I work a ton around the clock. So I manage digital assets and also manage my own assets. And I also trade on behalf of other people, and I create exchanges and platforms. You know, I've owned several domains. You know, it's a lot. It's overwhelming, you know, so, but it's worth it. I love what I do. So
what I guess, like, last couple questions, if someone was how would you advise people that are struggling with like time management? Like, do you sleep? What do you sacrifice to work so hard and, you know, make sure your schedule's tight? Do you plan it really well? Do you wake up really early? Do you just work? What about time management?
Dang, time management is definitely a weak point right now. And I'm kind of an insomniac because I stay up so late. That's one of the downfalls of working in the blockchain sector is that, you know, Wall Street and all these other global markets, you know, they work from 9 to 5 locally. You know, maybe there are a few exceptions I don't know of. But with the blockchain, it never stops. The exchanges just don't close ever, you know, and it's just one of those things that you just want to keep trading and you want to keep maximizing profit for the people that have entrusted you with their funds and also, for the betterment of your life as well.
Yeah.
But that's just one aspect of the business that I'm doing. So also I have to worry about coding and configuring files for the exchange that I'm building, laying out the framework and the grid work, deploying it locally on a test net with Ganache and just making sure that everything looks good, you know, also deploying templates and whatnot for, you know, the test net exchanges and just fully grasping exactly what this project is going to be doing for humanity and society as a whole. But when it comes down to my time management, I definitely need to work on that aspect. But when I am lucky enough to not have to go to, a full-time job right now. I don't have to commute. I work from home solely. So I do have these blocks of time that I do work on certain aspects of the business So, and these blocks of time span for about 4 hours at a time. So,
Gotcha. Okay.
yep.
Cool. So like, work for 4 hours, take a little break, work for four later in the day, and
Exactly.
wow. Man, that's cra it's crazy how much you do, man. That's and you make music on top of that, So do you approach that like a job as well, or is that more like I mean, I know it's you get money off of it too, but do you like block yourself time to write songs and produce, or is it just like you have a spare hour or two here and there and you
I
work on
will
new
be
music?
honest with you. I announced a 5-track EP on internet radio. It's in the channel of Peace, Abundance, and Liberty, MSPWaves.com.
Okay.
That was going to do a 5-track drum and bass EP because I just like what drum and bass is doing right now in the electronic dance music space. And I actually put that off for Coex.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've completely thrown music to the wayside for now for these next couple months, and then I'm going to return harder than ever. So.
Sweet. All right, man. I think that's about all the time we got. But Patrick, it was really great talking to you, and thank you so much for hitting me up. And it was kind of a pleasant surprise. I usually do two or three podcasts a week, and I did two already, and I have one coming on right after this. But it's my kind of fourth of the week, and it's kind of a great surprise. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome, Stephen. And it's a pleasure being on, So thanks for having me. And maybe sometime I'll come back.
So I have Coex linked down below in the show description. So just for people, people also listen to this as just a podcast. So why don't you tell people how they can find you online? Any other websites other than that? Why don't you just tell people and we'll get out of here, okay?
Okay, so you can find out about the Coex project at HTTPS. /// coex.io or just coex.io simply, and then you can go to our Discord channel and get involved there. Earn the tokens right now just by participating in our bounties and also nominating charities at discord.coex.io.
Okay. Gotcha.
also, we're at Twitter as well, so also Facebook. If you want to go to facebook.com/co.io, you can do that too. So yeah.
Cool. All right. Thank you so much. Thank you to everyone out there for checking out Call Me Ignorant today. You can find this uploaded to YouTube, BitChute, and FreedomScoop.com as a video, and Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean as a podcast. Please subscribe and follow my channel on the various platforms. If you feel like you've benefited from the show and you want to support, you can rate or review the show on iTunes or Spotify, or you can find one-time and monthly donation options below in the show description. I hope everyone out there enjoyed the show. My guest today was Patrick Booth, Chief Technology Officer at COEX.io, which stands for Kindness of Humanity Exchange. You can find his information linked below in the show description. Have a fantastic day, everybody. Go inform yourselves.